It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Great form by you hitting play on this podcast. Now, check out Same Racer, the brand new racing app for same race multi-tips. Same Racer. Download from the App Store and Google Play. Powered by BlueBet.
Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
Yablet! Four goals to Ablett.
Oh, Jabalenko! You're guilty!
Justin Madden's got the set. One hand. Oh, he's got it!
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it. Talk about a he-man.
Dream rises to the top. He is an absolute legend of the game.
This is your football life with Rex Hunt for Tobin Brothers Funerals. Celebrating lives.
Oh, Matthew, it is about celebrating lives and celebrating the footy lives of some of our champions. A lot of them, like me, have got a bit of years and a bit of vintage in them. But today's guest is just out of the game, and he is, even now, an endangered species. He's a Collingwood Premiership captain. He played 208 games for Collingwood between 2004 and 2014. 2009, he was All-Australian. He is Nick Maxwell, and he joins us. Nick, welcome to This Is Your Footy Life.
Thanks for having me, Rex.
Well, you've earned it. We only speak to the very, very creme de la creme here, mate. tell us about you growing up in Geelong, particularly before you attended St. Joseph's and played footy and then moved on to the Falcons. Tell us about your earliest memories as a kid at Corio Bay and also your first memories of playing with a footy in the park.
Yeah, I guess, Rexy, down in Geelong, St. Joseph's, the school, not the footy club, they weren't aligned in the early stages. So I was there for when I was 6 years old, playing under 9s and under 10s. And I was very small compared to a lot of the other boys, but just loved being out there and just having a kick. And probably one of the really good memories I've got was as a 13-year-old, Dad actually coached the team. And we played against Lara, who had won every game for the year. They'd beaten us 3 times, and we managed to knock them off in the grand final. So
wow.
That was a bit of early success. And I guess, look, for me, it was just love playing with my mates. And you'd play at lunchtime at school, and then you'd play on the weekends. And
yeah.
I guess when you get to about the age of 14, 15, that's when you start. There's a few squads and representative teams and that to start to get picked, and you start to think, well, I wonder what the possibilities are.
Well, we'll get on with that for the minute, Nick Maxwell, but I can remember as a kid when I had hair, and of course that was centuries ago, Ray Gablik and Johnny Henderson and Frank Tuck were my absolute heroes with Murray Wiedemann at Collingwood. Who was your childhood role model? Who did you really, really like reading about or, you know, perhaps watching on the telly as a kid?
Yeah, for me, Rexy, I was a Hawthorn supporter. So my great granddad played some reserve footy at Hawthorn. Then my granddad played reserve footy and actually won the league best and fairest at one stage in whatever league that was under VFL at the time. But neither went on to play. And Dad, he loved his footy and was good at it. But he got an apprenticeship at the age of about 16, 17. So that's sort of a building apprenticeship. So that took more preference for him because he was never going to sort of go on to play VFL footy. So growing up, spoken for Hawthorn, it was a strange one. Not a lot of people probably would have had this guy as a hero, but the guy that I really loved and looked up to is Anthony Condon.
Hawthorn,
number three, in the middle. And
I
just loved his aggression. We used to go up to Waverley Park occasionally and watch the Hawks. It was a big trip from down Geelong, but I used to love the way that he'd go about it. And Dad and I would quite often see him come out after half time and say taking his angry pills, and he'd fight up the boys, and you'd see he was always having a crack. So I liked watching him, but also for me the senior players at St. Joey's Footy Club, because it's a bit different back then compared to what it is now, where there's social media and there's so much, every game's covered and there's a million footy shows on. But back then, I guess you didn't have the access that you have now. So the senior footy players at St. Joey's, they were the ones you play. The juniors in the morning, you'd hang around all day and watch the reserves and the seniors, and you'd go out at quarter time and three quarter time and talk to them and touch them and look at them. And we had sort of a lot of good players at that time with McCartan and Hungerford and all the Smith brothers and all these guys who are legends down there in Geelong who I really looked up to.
Too right. Nick Maxwell is our special guest on This Is Your Footy Life. The 208-game Collingwood Premiership captain has joined us. Thanks to Tobin Brothers Celebrating Lives. And you're too early to be worrying about Tobin Brothers at the moment, mate. But we're just celebrating the footy life of Nick Maxwell. Geelong Falcons, early 2000s. Luke Hodge, Jimmy Bartel, Gary Ablett Jr. all went on to Premiership glory. The Goose, Matty Maguire from St Kilda to Brisbane, still did his best under an injury cloud. But you weren't drafted and you headed north to Ballarat.
Yeah, well, probably just taking a step back from that. The first time you really those representative teams start to happen, Rex, is as a 14-year-old getting invited down to the Falcons for the under-15s. And I went down there as a 14-year-old and they sort of have a big squad of 70 or 80. And every week they cut groups of 8 or 10. And I got to the day before they were going to announce their full team and I was in for the last section cut. The next year I was invited back down again and the same process and I was in the last one cut. As a 16-year-old, for the under-18s, I went down there and trained for the pre-season and got pretty far and then got cut. And as a 17-year-old, which the boys of the Falcons actually won the premiership that year and Jimmy Bartel, obviously a mate of mine, he was playing. But I was doing the whole pre-season and then in the first practice match, I broke a vertebra in my back. So I was out for about 5 or 6 months. I got cut then as well. So it sort of, I never really thought I was going to get there because I sort of never had been part of those squads. But fortunately enough, as an 18-year-old, I managed to make the squad and played every game. And we had a very good team. Obviously, all those guys that you reeled off, I think it was 13 guys who had played that year who ended up getting on an AFL list somewhere. But for me, I had a couple of really early lessons. Damien Christensen was a coach who obviously played some VFL footy, and he put me at full back. I'd been a rover; I'd only grew really late, and he put me at full back, so I shot up in the space for about 12 months. And mum and dad are convinced it was some steroids in the chicken at KFC, so I was there a fair bit working. But I managed to play, started at full back, and at quarter time in the first two games, he took me off and sat me on the bench and left me there.
Yeah.
Because he told me that he wanted me to start. He identified that I didn't have the speed to just stand next to someone and chase him out. So he asked me to stand 20 metres in front of my opponent just to cut the angles and read the play. And that was a real turning point for me because I was pretty frustrated. But he managed to turn me around and show me about using my skills of reading the play.
I can relate to this. It's a good apprenticeship. You know, you see kids probably down at Geelong as I did at Parkdale, and my dear friend Graham Bond did out at Ashburton. You see these kids that are always in the best players. They win the best and fairest. They don't go on with it. I reckon the biggest thing about it is when you get a little bit ahead of yourself is being put back down on your backside. And by playing with better players than yourself at any competition, Nick, you can only improve. But if you keep on dominating that big fish in the small pond, when you get out into the big pond, you can't swim.
Yep, you're spot on, Rex. And I guess now, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but my role at GWS, obviously we have a lot of top draft picks coming through. And it's a different challenge to a rookie, whereas because they have been the big fish, they've been the best player, they're used to everything going their way. When they don't get picked for a team or they get an injury or they get beaten in a game or something like that, then obviously that's something they're not as used to because they have been the best player coming through. So it offers a different challenge to that. If you get like a rookie coming through, he's had to fight tooth and nail for everything.
Yeah. Nick Maxwell, give us your clearest thoughts on arriving at the most famous football club in the Southern Hemisphere, the Collingwood Football Club, and, of course, meeting the very, very daunting meeting with Michael Malthouse.
Yeah, well, I guess I, as you said, I missed out on the Falcons on getting drafted, but I trained with Port Adelaide, and then they said they didn't want me. I went to Hawthorn, trained with them for about a month, and then they didn't want me, so I headed to North Ballarat and had a good year up there, and from there, Geelong asked me to come and train with them, so I spent about a month training with them, and then they didn't want me, Rex, so I actually found out I'd sort of given up by that stage.
Talk
so
about some knockbacks there, Maxie.
I was actually on my way to... on my way in to meet some friends just before Christmas because the rookie draft had been pushed right back in 2002 and I got a text message from a mate saying well on the draft and I didn't know what he was talking about and I rang him up and spoke to him and I was still very confused and I ended up looking down. I had all these voicemail messages and I thought, what's going on here? And I listened to the first one and said, oh, it's Noel Judkins recruiting off from Collingwood to welcome the club and I was like, yeah, right, and just deleted it. Just thought it was one of my mates taking the piss, and moved on to the next one and said it's Mick Malthouse from the Collingwood Footy Club, and I was like, yeah, of course it is, and I deleted that too. And then got down to the third one. That was my manager, Peter Linton, who I thought, well, none of my mates would even know who Pete was. So that's when I started to think, what's going on here? And the fourth one was Nathan Buckley. So found out I'd been picked to go to Collingwood.
And, wow.
Yeah, I got down there and had a time trial first day. It was the last day before Christmas when I got up there. And from there, it was just sort of, it was obviously Victoria Park. And for me, early on, I just wanted to find out as much as I possibly could about the club and about the history. Gavin Brown was my bass coach. So I sort of didn't know as much as I needed to know. So I went and read his book. I went and read Darren Mullane's book. And I just wanted to find out everything I could about this historic footy club that everyone either absolutely loved or absolutely hated. So Mick was, at that stage, Mick had never promoted a rookie permanently on the senior list. So I think it was probably more of an afterthought. There wasn't a lot of it going on. And to be honest, my first year at Collingwood, I wasn't a Collingwood footballer. I was a Williamstown footballer. They were our alliance.
They were the reserves,
Yeah, and I spent the whole year down there. I only trained with the senior team once during the season, with the Collingwood team once during the season. I was down there, and I was lucky that Brad Gotch was a coach, but we had some great VFL players, Troy West down there and Brad Lloyd. They were the co-captains, and then Sam Cranage and Craig Smoker and Adrian Fletcher. So all these guys who welcomed us with open arms into their Williamstown culture. And fortunately enough, we went on to win the VFL Premiership that year.
Great. And away you went. Did you find the expectation of not only the supporters, but of people sitting outside the fence on Collingwood, even when they had, in brackets with respect, an ordinary list, was unrealistic, the expectation, because they were the Carrying Bush? They used to be the Carrying Bush, and now the Magpies, they'll win. You find wearing a Collingwood Guernsey, sometimes the expectations were too great?
Yeah, I did when you went on. Obviously, early on, there was no expectations on me because I was a rookie, so no one really cared too much. If you happen to come good, then it's a bonus. But I think that for the side, that was probably harder through 2007 onwards, because we had opportunities. We made it, obviously, 2002 and 2003. I wasn't playing, but we lost grand finals, and then we had a mini rebuild. And 2007, we lost a prelim by under a kick, and 2008, we won a final and lost the next one. And obviously, 2009, the first year as captain, we lost the prelim. So I think everyone's expectations started to change and started to think, well, hang on, when's our time coming? And obviously, Shorey and the boys had broken the drought in 1990, and it was starting to look like it was going to be another big drought for the Pies.
Yeah, but it really means a lot more. We're going to take a break on behalf of Tobin Brothers, celebrating the footy life of Nick Maxwell. And join us, Relays, out of the break, and we'll be back shortly.
Dream rises to the top. He is an absolute legend of the game.
You're listening to This Is Your Football Life with Rex Hunt for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Well, Matty, it's just lovely to catch up with Nick Maxwell about his footy. And as we go on, Nicholas, and just talk about the famous football club and the famous captaincy of that wonderful 2010 Premiership, just a couple of short ones so people can get an idea of what you're doing now. What are you doing today to make a crust?
I've got a couple of roles, Rex. I'm with the Melbourne Storm as a leadership coach. So I've been here for 2 years now and really enjoying that. I'm at the GWS Giants, started in November of 2015 as a leadership coach there, and then doing a little bit of help with the back line, and then obviously doing a bit of commentary. So I'm on SEN and also on Channel 7 occasionally on Sunday Arvo. So a little bit of everything, which is good, yeah.
For yourself, what do you do for yourself, whether it's with your missus or your kids or whatever? What do you do when you've got a moment for yourself?
I try and spend as much time with the kids and also and helping my wife out. We've got three children who are five and under. So,
yeah, that's a big job.
Obviously travelling a fair bit with the Giants and the Storm, and also with commentary.
Yeah.
I sort of have to lean on her a fair bit, so I try to give her a chop out. But I also think in the same breath, I'm doing as much as I can, working as hard as I can for myself and my family.
You've got to put food on the table. Talking about food, Nick Maxwell, your favourite all-time food?
Mum's roast pork, I reckon. Can't go past that.
A lovely bit of crackling, magnificent. And finally, before we get back to Collingwood, who is your all-time favourite player, either at Collingwood or in the VFL-AFL?
It's tough. Look, I think probably one of the best I played with who taught me so much was James Clement. He was a guy I really looked up to and ended up playing a similar role to. So him and now I just love watching Hodgie play. Obviously, having seen him come through as a 16-year-old at the Falcons and how he's grown and
Captain
how he's
Courageous,
really changed.
A bit like yourself, mate.
He's changed his life too. He's even someone who was a bit of a lad from Colac. But,
I think you've got to have a little bit of that ingredient in you that we all know about. Nick Maxwell, it's been reported when Eddie McGrath announced the now famous succession plan that a number of players weren't happy with, which saw Malthouse replaced by Buckley, and you were one of them.
I wasn't so much one of them, Rex. I think there was a few of the boys who came to me and sort of said, "Listen, what do we do with this? We've just won a grand final, and it looks like we're a chance to win the second." And I just sort of I said to the boys, "Listen, we just worry about what's in our control. Let's focus on the next step, which is the next game we play. We can't look at big picture things like that." And I think that a lot of the time players get in the position where they think that they're scared of change. And I tried to embrace as much as I could. I knew the club had made a decision. Mick had been unbelievable for the club and for me personally, but it was going to be a new era. And I wanted to make sure that when Bucks came in, he had as much possible support as he could and that at no stage, anything to do with the player environment would threaten the success that we could potentially have in the future. So I wasn't so much a part of it who said, we can't allow this to happen. This is a decision made by the club, and I've got to do everything I can to help the players and help the club and help Nathan take over.
You mightn't agree with it, but you actually do it because it's all about the club. The 2010 Grand Final, reportedly the youngest in more than 30 years, and that goes back to the famous Richmond side where a lot of under-19 kids became men overnight under Hafey. You were just almost unbeatable in 2010 as far as attitude and a vision was concerned. You lost a few home and away games, but it's been reported that you've said publicly and privately, we're on a mission and we accomplished that mission. Although we drew that grand final, we were never going to get beaten in the replay. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, it's a fair call, Rex. I think that speaking to a lot of the players afterwards, because we were so young and so many guys hadn't had that grand final experience, a lot of guys were overwhelmed by the whole thing and overawed. Obviously, when we looked at it, looked at the review of it all and went through on the Monday morning, that was something I said to the boys that, listen, you've been in this position, look at your own performance. If you played poorly or you didn't play the way you wanted to, then a lot of people never get that opportunity to make amends, or they might get an opportunity in 5 years or 10 years, but in 5 days' time, you've got a chance to make amends. You can turn it around, and I promise you, if we win next week, no matter what happened in the draw or how you performed, that'll be forgotten. Because no one talks about how guys perform in the draw. They talk about, for example, Scotty Pendlebury. He'd been crook during the week, and he had a performance that obviously has such lofty standards. He wasn't happy with his performance in the draw.
Yeah.
But he just gets talked about as being a Norm Smith medalist because he was the champion player who performed on Grand Final Day.
I was fortunate to sit in the 3RW commentary box for two stints for over 25 years, and it was just a great thrill for me to hear you say live on 3RW across the nation, I don't think we've ever seen 44 guys go to war like we did just then. How tough was it, Nick Maxwell, on that day to know that that was the case? But hang on, in under 7 days' time, we're back here again, and this is life and death.
Yeah, there were so many just courageous acts from individuals, and even one that people wouldn't even talk about. Really late in that game, we broke out from half back, and Jason Graham left his man 50 metres behind him and made a decision to go and bump someone and knock the ball out of bounds. I mean, if he didn't get there, if he was a metre slower or a second slower, then the ball would have got over the top and we would have scored for sure. So there was sort of a lot of little elements. We know Lenny Hayes' goal and big mark by Goddard. There were so many little things that could have made the game go either way. But in the end, you sort of gave everything to that game. And to be able to reload after that, I think Eddie and Jeff Walsh and Mick were sensational in terms of they made us go to the function that night where you get around your family and friends and not have to go home and sulk about what happened, but look forward. So there's a lot of things we did that I think worked for us, worked in our favour. One thing I did, I caught up with Cameron Smith from the Storm, who I just talked to him on the Tuesday about how they had to back up from Origin and make sure that they're ready to go for the Melbourne Storm 3 days later, and just what sort of focuses you looked at. And he was sensational for me in that time, just talking about focusing on everyone just playing their role and keeping it nice and simple. And fortunately enough, we did that next weekend.
Thank you very much for joining us on This Is Your Football Life with Collingwood Premiership captain Nick Maxwell. And special thanks to Tobin Brothers, because we're saying it now, we're finding out about this wonderful career, which I reckon off the field is just warming up, both in the media and by tutoring young kids coming through, because this bloke we've got on now has done it the hard way, and that's what it's all about. What do you think of the AFL pulling away from a replay of the grand final now on extra time? It sounded like the comment you made to me on 3AW that 44 guys just went to war. Well, have a spell and a leak and you're going to go to war again. That would have sorted out the men from the boys there, Maxie.
It certainly did, Rexy. And look, for mine, I think that it's the right decision in the end, because of probably less because of that and the players, but more because just what everyone has to go through. I mean, the industry is a billion-dollar industry, so there's so many people affected by having to come back and do it the next week. So it's not something that's all that common in world sport. It's always sort of decided like golden points and those type of things, extra time. So I think it's probably the right decision. We had a lot of people who had to change plans, and we had Shane O'Brien's wedding coming up in Bali the next weekend, so we had to all change all our flights so we could get there a bit later and all that type of thing. So there's a lot of things that went on for so many people around the country that I just think it should be decided on that one day, and I think the AFL made the right call.
Yeah, in my time at Richmond, you know, we had mongrels like Sheedy, Balm, Robert McGee, Ricky McLean, who used to sort out their problems because there wasn't too many Channel 7 cameras hanging about. But you had the likes of Heath Shaw, Dale Thomas, Alan Didak, Benny Johnson, Mr. Pitchers himself, Dane Swan, the Rat Pack, the famous Rat Pack. Did you have any troubles controlling these guys, or was it like Sheedy, Balm, McLean and the rest at Richmond? They really were part of the nucleus of what the team plan is all about.
Yeah, I felt you had to have different personalities, Rex. I think that if everyone, obviously the scrutiny on footballers these days, every single person, social media now has got an opinion on your performance. So I think that you need those type of players to lighten the mood and to be different. If everyone's vanilla, then it's a pretty boring place to be around. So I obviously got on really well with all those guys. And even though I had very different beliefs and I did different things on the weekend, but I think those boys, they also knew that while they wanted to enjoy themselves and have a good time, they knew there were certain team rules that were non-negotiables, and that was because they were part of the discussions when we came up with them. I think it's important that the players actually have a say in what you want to hang your hat on. Yeah. And what values you want to have as a team, and fortunately enough, those guys, I mean, we wouldn't have won a flag without those guys, not only their performance on the field but also off the field, being able to lighten the mood as well.
Before we go, it's been lovely of you to chat with us, and we appreciate your time on behalf of Tobin Brothers, celebrating the footy life of Nick Maxwell. Without giving too much away, what's on your horizon personally? Coaching, more media, bringing young kids to believe in themselves, and you know as well as I do, even when you're just not quite good enough in the ability stakes, if you've got the right attitude, eventually the cards will fall your way. What's in the immediate future for a recently retired Nick Maxwell?
Look, right now, Rex, I'd love to see, obviously, the Melbourne Storm and the GWS Giants. I'd love to see both teams or one or the other win a premiership this year or the next year. I think that that's why we play footy, and that's why I'm doing what I do with both those clubs. I want to see success. So yep, that's the immediate future. But I'm also doing a master's degree. So that's sort of, I guess, something that coaching isn't really my thing. I think that probably a little bit more down the lines of administration
footy director. CEO, you've actually been, put in a possibility of succeeding Gary Pert at Collingwood. That mightn't happen that quick, but it's like my hair, Nicholas. It won't happen, but it won't happen overnight.
Well, you never know, Rexy. I mean, that's something one day. We'll see. But look, at the moment, I'm just enjoying what I'm doing and let the future take care of itself.
You've been great, and hug your children and your wife, mate, because you just got a loan of the kids, and it's a special time for you and your missus, and it's a balancing act. But thanks for your time today and giving us an insight on one of the three remaining living Collingwood Premiership captains, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it, Nicholas.
Thanks for having me, Ricky.
And thank you very much to Nick Maxwell. We're here for Tobin Brothers Funerals, and a great performer has presence on stage. They work hard at engaging audiences, folks. Even after the curtain falls, they leave a lasting impression. And these qualities make them stand out from the rest. Tobin Brothers Funerals is a perfect example. After more than 80 years, they continue to shine. Tobin Brothers genuinely care for families, providing professional guidance and expertise, and strive to always be creative. These distinguishing qualities make Tobin Brothers Funerals the true performers they are. I'm proud to be associated with Tobin Brothers, promoting our great Australian game and its characters. Find out more at tobinbrothers.com.au. If you'd like to hear the extended version of this interview, check out facebook.com/Tobin Brothers Funerals or follow us on Twitter at RexFootyLife.
Sometimes needing new tyres can catch us by surprise. That's why Tyre Power gives you the power of Zip Pay and Zip Money. You can get what you need now, get back on the road safely and pay for it later. Terms and conditions apply. So visit tyrepower.com.au or call 13 21 91.